Happy Tuesday, TBP crew. I appreciate you guys all being here, and I want to just give it a quick little apology for the last week or so. It's been slumping since the Red Sox video that I posted about the Bregman and Devers drama. So I just wanted to thank you all for coming back to this video and watching this, especially if you're a Mariners fan. It is a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday. I know it's supposed to be Mariner Mondays. I had some family stuff I had to take care of. If I'm just being completely transparent with you guys, it's been a little rough. So with that said, appreciate you guys coming back. Enjoy this video that was actually recorded about 2 weeks ago. And next Monday, I will be putting out my interview with Ty Dane Gonzalez with Locked On Mariners Talking Ball. And we'll see how much of it's relevant to the current times. But as of right now, both interviews are pretty much spot on to what we're seeing in spring training and what we would be talking about anyways this week. So enjoy. Welcome back to the Touching Bases podcast. Today, joining me for Mariner Mondays is Ben Ranieri. Now, he has a C-level podcast. You can go ahead and check out his links down in the description. Very intricate. He's had really good interviews with a lot of, I would say, popular podcasters in the Mariners atmosphere. And it's our first time interacting, so we'll see how it goes. But Ben, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
I wanted to change up things a little bit when it comes to the talk of the Mariners offseason, because there's not much to be positive about, and everybody's been like kind of down about it. And I think fans as well are putting in the comments like, oh, all these creators are backing up and just justifying all this stuff that they're doing and just part of the coup or whatever of the Mariners fan base or Mariners PR. But I'll be the first to say none of them are defending what happened this offseason. But at the same time, we just came out with a Mariner Monday last week, and T from East Coast Ams, he was pretty positive about it. I mean, he's bringing up the reasons why we should probably have a little bit of faith. And I want everybody who watches this and follows through with the rest of this podcast, there is hope. There really is. And even though I personally would love to see one specific player come back that's still available and is now blowing up Twitter as we record this, Justin Turner, I would love to see him come back here. What do you think the thoughts are from the Mariners front office as far as just kind of cutting things off? Besides money, do you think that there is anything that might red flag the front office after what we saw from Justin Turner last season?
No, I don't know. I don't think there's really any red flags on Justin Turner. I think it's more so just like they started the off season with pursuing Carlos Santana. I think they saw him as a good fit in the clubhouse. I know they saw him as a good fit in the clubhouse. And I think they like the fact that he was a switch hitter that could add some balance to their lineup from a handedness perspective. And then it was like, kind of like, he also adds you, he gives you plenty of defensive value at first base, very good defender. And he's got a very good relationship with Julio. So like, there was just a lot of reasons why, that was a good fit. And then once that fell through, obviously that fell through very quickly. I think that Friday before the Saturday that he was signed and the Josh Naylor trade went down and all that stuff, I think that Friday night they had thought they had a deal done. And then obviously, like, who can blame him for the decision he ended up making? And then I think they got to the point where it was like, okay, Justin Turner, I think they're interested in bringing Justin Turner back. They were interested in bringing him back. But then it was like, but for the role that we would want him to play, you know, it just fits our budget so much better to go with Donovan Solano, who's just essentially the exact same player. They're very, very similar. They're going to play a very similar role. they would have played a very similar role. And so, yeah, Justin Turner still fits. But the way that I understand it, Donovan Solano is essentially just going to fill that role. I like Justin Turner. I think the players in the clubhouse love Justin Turner. I think he would have been a good fit in a lot of ways. I just don't think that ultimately the money was going to fit from the Mariners' perspective when they could just get Donovan Solano for, you know, $3.5 million to fill essentially the same type of role. So I think more so it was just like a process of elimination after Carlos Santana, where they were like, you know, it doesn't really make a whole lot of, it might make clubhouse sense, a lot of clubhouse sense for us to bring back Justin Turner. But like, if we're just being honest about the actual role that he would play, yeah, I mean, he's probably better than Donovan Solano over like a, like he could probably give you more of an everyday role. But Donovan Solano also plays multiple other positions in the infield and plays a very similar role for a cheaper price. So ultimately, I think it was probably a smart pivot, and I still think he could fit on the roster. I just don't think that that will be, if they do make another move, I don't think it would be that one.
Well, and I mean, you mentioned the whole Santana thing. I'm curious, 'cause there's a lot of things that really pop in my head when you mentioned that. But first thing, do we really think we were in the ballpark for a agreeable offer with Santana, looking at what Cleveland offered him? Like, is that really something we were going to offer $12 million?
It wasn't that. I don't think it was that, from everything I understand and everything I've been told. I don't think it was that deal. Like, you can't just, not every situation is like to where you can just be like, well, the Mariners could have done that. So it wasn't that deal, like 1 year. I think it was 1 year, 12 or 12 and a half or something like that. It wasn't that deal. They had offered him a 2 year deal that essentially, I don't know exact specifics of it, but I would guess, if I had to guess, it was probably 2 years, 16, 17 million. So it was a multi-year offer. And Santana's a guy who, like, he's very prepared, and he kind of wants to know relatively early in the off season, like, where he's going to be for spring training. Like, he is one of the most like prepared, and he's a pro's pro. And so he kind of wanted to know where he was going to be. So I think a 2 year offer was probably very attractive to him, but the fact that he could go home to Cleveland, on a 1 year deal with, you know, maybe not quite comparable. The AAV was more, but the guaranteed dollars, I think, were more in Seattle's favor. I think it's just too much of a an offer for him to turn down to go back home at an AAV like that at 30, almost 39 years old.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on top of that, you're going to a team that was in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess that's one more booster, but it's like, I'm just curious what it was behind closed doors, what the offer was, and if he was seriously considering it, because
they thought it was done. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they thought the deal was done on that Friday.
It's so brutal just to be like,
yep.
Yeah, we're in the bag. And that's another thing. I mean, that brings up, because I wanted to hit on the Solano deal, because if, I mean, we all talked about and have read the DePoto thing, like basically saying like, oh, this was like kind of part of our plan. Like this worked out for us. Like, we're pretty optimistic with what we have. Like, we didn't make any mistakes. We didn't lose out on anything. Just the whole way that he kind of phrased it, like, don't worry, guys, like, we got this. And, you know, this worked out great for us. And then, you know, that exact storyline of what happened with Santana. It's like, no, your plan was to get Santana. Your plan was to have a switch hitting excellent bat last year. Like, he's probably, at least for anybody over 36, I would say that he was probably one of the best offensive guys, at least for Minnesota. Like, he was definitely best for them, but in the American League, for sure. I'm trying to think of anybody in like the National League that's older than that produced. I don't even think Goldschmidt produced as well as he did. So it was definitely probably goal number one, even though they said the priority was Roky Sasaki, which is another situation where it was like, didn't work out. So again, holes in your story of like, this was part of the plan, but you know, choosing Solano over Turner started out, I understand he's 40, but he started out as a third baseman. He even played second for the Red Sox. So I mean, at that point, his age is probably the only thing separating him and Solano at that point.
I think just to even go further, it just is strictly money. It's strictly money. Like there's no, I don't think there's anything else really to that except for the fact he's a better defender than Turner would be at third base and second base. If they're going to use him there, he hasn't really played a lot of second base in the last 2 years, but he's a better defender. He's definitely more capable. The Mariners weren't going to play him at third base at all. And Turner,
I would have been fine with it personally. Like, yeah, I like Rayleigh at first.
It's just tough. I think it's just tough to, it's even tough to stomach playing a 37-year-old, a lot of regular innings at a position that's not first base. And so that would have been, I wouldn't have even been comfortable with Solano playing over there too much.
That's what I thought the move was. Like,
yeah, and then that's pretty fair. I mean, I think it was fair to wonder if that was the lever that they had pulled. But ultimately, I think that they just went with a better price for them that allowed them to obviously pull the Polanco lever later on.
Yeah. And that, I guess, opens the door to – if we're really focusing on money, obviously I don't like to focus on the money because it's just so depressing, but like Mariner fans, chill out, like stick with us. We're being positive this episode about the offseason, right? Like we do have money most likely. And I don't know why he hasn't signed yet, but like, if we're not doing Turner, which I think he deservedly like a $7 million deal, I don't know how much he would actually play. But he did perform. There's no reason to say that he's not going to get the bag that he deserves, especially with his charisma, his clubhouse atmosphere, the numbers he put up, and the fact that, I mean, he doesn't look unhealthy. Like he's still holding it together. And the Cubs are interested. The Mets were interested. I saw, who else did I see that was posting that they were interested in? The Red Sox were interested in bringing him back.
The Reds had checked in at one point.
The Reds. Yeah.
A lot of good ballpark fits for him in there as well. So, yeah. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Cubs, Red Sox, Reds. There's plenty of teams that could definitely offer him the money that he probably wants. But if we're not choosing him and we're going off age just because it is, I understand it's shaky to like willingly put a 40-year-old at second or third base. And now we have Polanco. So that's kind of. Cat's out of the bag on that. I think he's going to do better this year. I really do. He's going to be healthy as long as he doesn't get re-injured and he's really durable. He's going to have a great season. I'm okay with him at third over Rojas. But second base, T mentioned, got to give Bliss a chance. Okay, I have no problem with Bliss playing second, but I would rather have him be a platoon. And if we have the extra money. And I have no interest in doing trade deadline acquisitions. I really don't, because they last 2 months and then they're gone. And that's just, that doesn't give me any impact for the rest of the season. Cause if we're not in win mode now, then like they might get us to the playoffs, but like after that, what happens the year after? Like, okay, well, we're not going to get that. If again, money at the end of the year, we're not going to get that money back from Stanton. He's just going to give us a straight budget, even if we had more the year before, and he's going to take it away and give a reason why we can't be supplied it. So I'd rather have the guys for the entire year. So as I finally get to my point, Jose Iglesias, strong second baseman, can play short if JP goes down, because we all know he has some injury questions that pop up randomly with him, at least the last couple of years. I know he did great in 2023, but if we need somebody for short, if we need somebody for second, if we want to platoon that middle infield, which we already do, we have Bliss and we have more, but as for a solid bat that just gets on base, he's affordable. He's not going to be anything close to Justin Turner. He's a little bit younger. I think he's what, 36, 34?
Yeah, I think he's, yeah, I think he's 35-ish.
Somewhere in there.
Sounds right.
Yeah, so again, everybody's going to be like, oh, they're all old. Okay, well, tell me a young second baseman that's available right now that we can go get. Ahmad Rosario was my pick, and he got picked up real quick. And I don't know why the Mets are not touching Jose Iglesias. They finally signed Pete Alonso. Like, just bring back your another clubhouse guy. Mm-hmm. Like, he started the OMG thing, which went viral. Wrote a whole song, performed it on the field. The fans loved it. Like, he's a good guy to have around your clubhouse. That doesn't mean that he's going to be that same dude in Seattle because it's a new team. But he can perform, and he might, because when – I mean, you've been to Mariners games. I've been to Mariners games. When it's, like, riled up, like, the fans, the stadium is rocking. It's fun. And he could definitely vibe off of that. But – what are we like? We're gonna wait till we wait for a trade deadline, and who are we gonna pick up? Like, who's gonna be a impact bat that we can trade for that is going to give us that edge if we're like, let's say, one game behind first? That's wishful thinking at this point. But let's say we are, and I don't want to say the Astros. Let's say Texas wakes up and all of a sudden they're dominant. We're one game behind them. It's July 28th. Who are we going to go get? And then at that point, you're so desperate. You're going to give some money. You're going to trade away some prospects for who? And teams know when you're desperate to add a bat and you're hunting the playoffs, they're going to want more in return because they have the leverage. Again, why I would rather sign in the offseason. Who are we going to get?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's I think it's a fair question. I think even before you even get to that point, though, it's like there's got to be more, like, there's always more that we maybe don't know either. So, like,
fair. Yeah.
You know, it's like, do they think, like, how much do they have in surplus? Because we know that they like to save a little bit for the deadline in terms of money to actually use stuff, but then you actually have to be in position to win and to be a buyer at the deadline. So it's like a twofold thing, and so I think the biggest thing, I actually, you know, I'd be totally cool with Jose Iglesias, be totally fine with it. I just think the even worse thing to me is, like, if you're in the position at the deadline and then you can't go do it because you don't have, because you have these self-imposed guide rails on you to where you can't do it. Like, one of the most depressing deadlines that they've ever had, in my opinion, was 2018. They had zero money to spend, and that team was in position win the division, make the wild card for the entirety of the season, and they won 89 games and didn't get in. And a large part of that was just an absolute dud at the deadline because they didn't have any sort of – they were able to go out, and I think they got David Phelps, Zach Duke, and Cameron Maben, and it wasn't good enough. All those guys were not making any money, and they were just kind of fillers to go do the thing. So, like, I think some of this is just like, hey, we have Dylan Moore, we have Ryan Bliss. You know, I honestly think if they do add, it'll be a reliever before opening day. I think that they probably are just like, you know, how much better is Jose Iglesias? He's going to be worse than he was last year. Like, there's just almost no way he's going to be better than he was last year. He had a career year offensively. And so it's like, you know, is he going to be an upgrade over Dylan Moore and Ryan Bliss? Like, value wise, I mean, the probability is probably in Jose Iglesias' favor, but then it's like, what kind of money do you have to spend at the deadline if you're really in it? I think you need to save some of those bullets for that potential situation, but at the same time, it's that delicate balance of, like, you have to be in contention to actually buy. So, I think this equation is kind of just like Dylan Moore and Ryan Bliss to keep them afloat. And then I think they're hoping that Cole Young is ready to go in probably June. And again, that's a lot of faith to put into Bliss and Young that haven't performed a ton. Don't have a, obviously Cole Young hasn't at all, and Bliss has just a very small amount with some red flags. So it's a nuanced conversation when you're talking about all that stuff, but like the deadline, you know, a lot of times you can get, you know, patchwork players like Justin Turner, who cost you pretty much nothing. Like nobody probably even remembers who they traded for Justin Turner. And you know, like a lot of times those rentals are, yeah, they're gone at the end of the season, but it's like, you know, they traded RJ Schreck for Justin Turner, and nothing against RJ Schreck, but like nobody really cares at this point, like that they traded RJ Schreck. So
did we give up any money? Do we have to pay anything when it came to, I mean, obviously besides the contract for the rest of the year, but did we send cash over with him?
I actually think the Blue Jays, yeah, I think it was just, they just paid the rest of his deal, which was, I mean, they took on a significant amount of salary at the deadline with Rosarena and Turner. I think it was like $5 or $6 million remaining on Turner's, on Turner's deal. If I'm remembering correctly, it was RJ Schreck, but
I think you're right.
They made two deals with the Blue Jays, and then they traded obviously Jimmy Garcia. Jonathan Clase for Jimmy Garcia. So,
which is ironic, he went back to the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
2 months later.
Yep.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I'm curious. So I wanted to hit on the 2018 thing because it's like, what do you remember? Because I don't recall. Do you remember what names were on the hot list for the Mariners to pick up besides obviously Cameron Maven, who they brought in, but like any names that had a significant contract that fans or analysts or reporters were hoping for that would possibly make a fit?
I don't remember any exact names. I just know that if they were willing to like add any more payroll, then they would have been better players than what they ended up getting.
Well, that's again a Stanton thing. It's like, hey, we're going to make the playoffs. Could we have five more mil? Like, literally like four home games worth of revenue. Can we please?
That was a really good team too. It was totally a team, you know, worth taking a shot on. So it's just the frustration of like, you know, they are, the American League, in my opinion, is wide open. And with just like a little bit more investment, like not like literally just a little bit more, like a $10 million extra, you could make this into, they could have really, really made this into potentially the best team in the American League. And they're just these half measures continue to just kind of hamstring.
We're so depressing, aren't we? I'm trying to be positive. I don't know. I'm just, it's a reality, man. It is the way it is. I pulled up Jose Iglesias's numbers. And I completely understand what you were saying and where you're coming from as far as the as far as his age, and then he had a career year, he's not gonna put up those same numbers. But at the same time, he's never, I mean, besides 2012, but he only played in 25 games. Like every season he's hit over 250. Every season he's hit over 250. Last season, of course, 337. That's pretty good. He did do 373 in 2020. Of course, that's half a season. But if he goes back to hitting 250, I mean, I am still for him. Like, I would spend that money and grab him for a full season, because that could be, I mean, he averages like a one-win player, right? That's his norm. Like, he averages, or two. Okay, he averages a two-win player, but even if he gives us just one, which would kind of put him between his 2022 season and 2024 season, I would feel much better about him being like the everyday starter at second base, having that bat. And then he's not that slow either, even for his age, but if we wanted to throw Bliss in there, I would be fine with it, like towards that, like later of the season. Or if JP goes down, I would love to see him at shortstop, because his range really isn't too bad. Like his, I don't know if I have the defensive stats on this page. I think I'll have to go to fielding, but I mean, Career 283. That's his average.
Yeah, no, he's a solid player. And I totally understand. I would probably do that too. It's just like, I think that where they're coming from is like, yeah, Dylan Moore's going to get on base just as much. He's going to give us just as much defensive value, if not more. Dylan Moore can play shortstop. And then, you know, they have guys like, I think they like Leo Rivas quite a bit as like a filler guy at shortstop and as kind of a switch hitter that makes contact. And Ryan Bliss is a, you know, he's performed at every level. He's a high minors performer, which they like, and showed some good things at the big league. So, I mean, it's a worthy shot, in my opinion, to take that on Ryan Bliss as well. So, like, I understand that. I would rather them use that remaining, if they're going to make one more move, I would rather that be in the bullpen.
Bullpen, okay.
But, you know.
Where, I mean, the last four signings have been relief pitchers and not really names that we're too excited about. I mean, if you like high velocity, you have Fujinami, but he doesn't know how to locate. The rest just have a bunch of really high ERAs, and we pulled back somebody who is, I believe, next year going to be eligible for the Hall of Fame ballot. He's been gone for so long. So, I mean, are you talking free agent signing reliever now or like a trade?
I'd be thinking like a trade.
Okay.
Like kind of similar to what they did with Gregory Santos last year. Like I know they've been in conversations and kind of kicking around reliever trades all winter. At the beginning of the winter, I think they were even more so interested in some of the relievers that were out there. Again, that some of the stuff may have changed since they decided not to deal Castillo. I think if they were going to do that, they were going to have more money to spend potentially. I think a trade makes a lot of sense. I mean, they're going to add their pile guys. Like they're going to add the guys that they think they can do a tweak or two with. It's kind of in the formula where they've hoped that one or two of those guys sticks, but they need, in my opinion, they just have a lot of guys at the back end that I worry about from a health perspective. I think there's some guys in Miami. I think there's some guys in Tampa. I think there's potentially even some guys in Colorado and LA with their roster crunch that are somewhat interesting.
We will take a lot of the Dodgers AAA bullpen at this point, because there's so many of them that are pushed down.
Yeah, they got some really interesting. Michael Grove and Ben Kasperius are two guys that I really like.
I'd love Ben Kasperius. I think he did great. I mean, I know it's a small sample size, but though he looked like he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he's a stud. He's got really good stuff. I think I would like them to take a shot on a proven bullpen guy, or at least a higher upside bullpen guy, especially with the Brash situation, and then Troy Taylor is banged up and Santos couldn't stay healthy last year, and Munoz had a high workload. So there's just a lot of, in my opinion, uncertainty health-wise in the back end of the bullpen, to where I think it's worth, and maybe it could be a free agent as well, like kind of running back the Stanek signing. But at the same time, they probably know that they could a Stanek-type signing, not Stanek himself.
Back to the Mets. I liked him, but I know he blew a lot of games.
I think they can probably afford also to like wait a little bit on that too. Kind of see how their guys' health looks in the spring training. Like, there's not really any reason to do it right now. Just kind of wait it out a little bit, see how the health turns out kind of through February. Cause I mean, that's when the majority of injuries pop up in spring training. And at the beginning of the season,
grab a Ryan Yarbrough. Ooh, that'd be nice.
I've been a big Pete Fairbanks guy.
You are talking trade then. You're getting them, getting them Rays involved. I don't know if they're going to want to let him go though.
No, probably not. The more realistic scenario would be Miami. Miami's got some guys. But anyways, I think they'll probably wait that out.
I mean, I've been hearing this I wouldn't say a lot, but I heard it a couple times and I love this idea, but of course I don't know how it's very, it's like the Rockies and the Marlins are two organizations that I still just can't get a grip on how they operate their organization. Their moves are just like, really? Oh, okay. I guess like, I don't see what the logic here. And then when they explain it, it's like, again, like, okay, I guess, but that still doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, the move, I understand like some contracts end, they're not going to extend them, but like who they got back for, was that not Alcantara? Who was it? Was it Alcantara for the Phillies?
Or Jesus Luzardo?
Luzardo.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Alcantara, and then I was also thinking of Yuri Perez, but yeah, Jesus Luzardo. I understand that he has like injury history and all that stuff, and he doesn't really pitch very much, but that's pretty much their entire rotation. But they're all like high ceiling guys if they're healthy. And their return, I was just kind of like, okay, I guess. Like, are you desperately trying to get him off like your payroll and then go that route? And if that's the case, I believe that they're part of that. And I've talked about this in the last couple of pods, so if you're hearing this again, you already know what I'm going to say. But the Players Association grievance, like if they're not spending over, I believe it's 105, 110 mil for payroll, then they're going to get filed against. At least that was a big thing for Sacramento. I'm still getting used to saying that. So if that's the case, like what? I mean, would they take Haniger?
Yeah, I think we're getting pretty like late in the off season for something like that to happen. Like maybe it's always possible. I'll never say never. I just think if the Mariners were going to do that, they would have done it. You know, they would have had those conversations. You know, and maybe a reliever goes down and they're willing to like, you know, give up a prospect that makes sense for the Marlins to take back Haniger. I think if that was going to happen, they would have done it. With the idea of actually being able to add someone at this point, like
the Mariners or the Marlins,
the Mariners, I think they would have done that already if, you know, to free up, I mean, they would have to have a use for that money. I mean, I guess, you know, I just don't see them just dumping Haniger with a prospect to get a reliever if they can't really, there's no other avenues for them to spend that money. There's nobody for them to spend that money on at this point. And so, yeah, I find it unlikely. I think if they
can go get Bregman, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that the whole idea of like, Mitch Haniger's contract next season when it falls off, cause of, he's not coming back. Like Haniger was that clubhouse addition. And I think that was the mistake that they made. They're like, okay, we're not doing clubhouse additions. If they're going to cost us a certain amount of money, that's just absurd. Like Haniger's was. but I also understand, like I was getting to, is that that money is going to probably end up going 100% to arbitration next year, where we're probably going to have to non-tender a couple more players as we did this year. I mean, Austin Voth is going to go replace Roky Sasaki with the Marines. So that's interesting. I didn't think that he would have to leave the MLB considering he didn't have a terrible year last year. But if you want to explore, you can explore. Go see what the MPB has to offer. It's getting more popular in the US. Like there's a lot more eyes on it now. I have a hobby box.
Do I have? Yeah.
I ordered this from Japan. This is a Topps Chrome MPB baseball card box.
Sweet.
That's awesome. It is very hard to get that, by the way. Like shipping, international ship, it's a nightmare. But like, I'm intrigued. I am, and I would have never even thought about these players until of recently. And I think that start. I mean, obviously Ichiro did a way back in what 2000 when we really kind of signed that contract and brought him over here. But of course, Shohei has kind of really opened that door to where there's a lot more players that are on the way because you had Otani and then you had Yamamoto and now you have Roky Sasaki and people were like, oh shit, like okay, Japan's pretty popular. So with Voth going over there, maybe he'll get a better look, maybe he'll be able to develop some, see new batters who are contact oriented instead of power oriented, and then earn his way back here. But at the same time, for the Mariners, who's replacing him in the bullpen? Because out of spring training, I would say opening day, we aren't going to see Brash. I heard conflicting information about Gregory Santos. And then, of course, Troy Taylor, who I was really hopeful for, is now out. So who's our guy that we're saying is our replacement for both? Do you know? Because I don't.
I think the bullpen, I mean, obviously health depending, it's going to be Munoz. And then, you know, you're going to have, I would be pretty surprised if Edward Bizzardo wasn't in the bullpen on opening day. He showed a lot last year at the end of the year. And then Okay. Obviously you have the Gabe Spires, and Santos is healthy, right now, from everything Okay. I've heard, he's healthy and ready to go again. He was healthy at different points, last year, and he's had a lot of different injuries. So hopefully he's back to a good health standing at this point. And then Gabe Spire, Taylor Saucedo, there's Colin Snyder. Like, there's a bunch of different guys in there that have some, you know, middle relief experience and have given the Mariners some pretty good innings over the last couple of years. So they're going to be fine.
As long as Gabe Spire doesn't have a similar season as last year, then yeah, I agree.
Yeah, he was dealing with some injuries stuff last year, and his velo was down and never really looked right the entire year. So it's like, there's a lot of questions down there, but that's the thing that they're really good at, is finding these guys, you know, with interesting traits, and the Will Kleins of the world and the Shintaro Fujinamis of the world and different guys like that. I think they'll be able to find a couple of those guys that work. And so,
do you think Logan Evans comes up in a relief spot this year?
No, I don't think so. I think they tried that. And he, stuff didn't tick up like they really wanted it to. And I think he's just a better fit as a starting pitcher. I think Brandon Garcia, another guy that I didn't mention. That's a guy that they're, I think, interested in putting in the bullpen this year. And I think could be, you know, the similar to the Troy Taylor of last year, probably with a little earlier call up. Really, really, really fun arm.
Do you think he has the potential to be a closer? Like, because I feel like moving forward, not this year, we're talking later, but eventually, because we know how the Mariners operate, Munoz is going to get too expensive. Like, do you see Brandon Garcia maybe eventually taking that spot, or do you think it's more of a Troy Taylor?
Well, yeah, it's hard to say. I think the thing with Munoz is he's not going to get more expensive because he was extended. So he was.
I thought it was backloaded. No.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get more expensive, but not like expensive. He's very, very affordable for them. For the coming years, he gets a little bit more expensive, but nothing crazy. So, I mean, yeah, I think there's a you know, relatively good shot that Garcia should still get a look as a starter. He was very, very, very good in Arkansas last year, and I think the plan is for him to kind of probably stretch out as a starter and then go to the bullpen this year, and then we'll kind of see. In the years, we'll see kind of how that goes, and in the years moving forward, what they end up doing with him. But he's certainly got good stuff.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I got to push back a little bit because, like, Munoz he's good this year, almost 3.5 million. But 2026 that doubles. I mean, it goes to 6, and then 2027 it goes to 8 million, and then at age 29 in 2028 10 million. Like, I don't think. And it's a club option. I don't think the M's are going to hang on to him. They're going to hope that he has an amazing year this coming year. Hopefully he gets enough support because, like, he was overworked significantly last season. So if they're able to take that off of his shoulders a little bit, he performs like he does, his value is going to go through the roof, which is why I think after next year, he would be a trading piece.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I won't dispute that. I mean, they'll trade a bullpen guy if he's at the right kind of maturity point for them to trade him. But they drafted a lot of guys last year that are, you know, really interesting in terms of back end bullpen types. They drafted a bunch of guys.
Got a switch pitcher
in the middle rounds. Yep. yeah, they drafted a bunch of guys in the middle round. Hunter Cranton, Cam Little. They drafted a whole bunch of guys that have really, really interesting stuff that'll should rise very quickly through the minor leagues if they just keep them as strict relievers. So I'm not super worried about them.
Not too worried about
their ability to develop any bullpen guys.
Well, and it brings up, I mean, I don't know a whole lot about these guys, but I know that like Colton and Joe were pretty big on the international draft signings that we got. I again, like I said, I have not been overly hyped and like talked about as far as these guys go. I have to look them up again. One of them is Martinez, I believe. Or is it
Henry's Martinez and your hair, Bautista?
Yeah, Bautista. Okay. So, I mean, educate me, man, because I mean, they're so excited for them. But I mean, I am probably as ignorant about these two guys as anybody watching this channel that doesn't follow the Mariners at all. So, what do you know so that I can feel a little bit better? I mean, what's their? I understand that they have like really good power.
Yeah,
like so high potential, but like, are we talking 2028? Are we talking next year? Like, what
the thing with those guys is it's impossible really to put any sort of ETA on those guys until we've. Okay. I never put ETAs or even like really aggressively rank those guys in my prospect rankings until they've actually seen stateside, because you just never know. They're very, very, very young, and they're coming over to a country where they potentially. You know, there's so many life factors that go into how they assimilate into United States culture. And so usually they start in the DSL for their first year. But in terms of like Yoher Bautista, he's one of, you know, he's a consensus top 3 to 5 player in this year's signing, international signing period. He is, you know, he's got every tool that there is. He's a center fielder. True center fielder, really, really loud tools. He's like, from everything that I understand, he's like very well known across the country. Like if you say the nickname The Beast, like everybody knows who Yoher Bautista is. He's a freak. He's got loud tools. He runs well. Really, really good power. He's obviously a little bit more on the raw side compared. He's one of the most talented players they've acquired over. I mean, you'd probably put him in a similar light to Julio and some of these other guys they've had come over. And then Kendrys Martinez is kind of a more polished player, but with less tools. So he's like very, very solid. Very solid, like controls the zone very, very well, like polished player, but doesn't really have like he should assimilate very, very well. And like doesn't have like a super big carrying tool or the loud tools like Bautista has, but two really nice international signings for the Mariners that should, you know, be making some noise in their farm system kind of, and they'll probably start as in the DSL this year. And then, you know, you'd think stateside in 2026, and then it's just ultimately like how well they kind of assimilate here in 2026 and beyond.
Yeah, they paid a lot of money for them. I didn't know that they dropped that much money for these two guys. 2.1 mil for Bautista and then 2.5 mil for Martinez.
Yep.
I mean, I understand we had probably the most money to allocate, but like, I mean, that says a lot. It just sucks that we have to wait. And then, yeah, I mean, you were talking, I was kind of watching that video here of, I guess his, I don't know, prospect video, whatever they do to send over to teams and stuff. But this dude is like coming from a rough area. Like it's, for anybody who's like listening on Spotify, it is like brick wall advertisement outfield and just like, the slums in the background. Like it's, I don't mean any disrespect, of course, like wherever they're from, it's a very low income area where he's showcasing himself. So it's going to be a culture shock for him. And it's interesting because it seems like we keep getting guys from the same area. Julio in 2017, Noelvi Marte, who's now with the Reds and loves to do steroids, in 2018. We still have Laz Montes here in 2022, and then Celestin in 2023. So we're picking from a similar pot. No, I'm excited now. I mean, I just didn't look into these guys. I just it's too far back for me, not specifically looking at the Mariners. And I think that's awesome. I mean, that's good to know. And at least, I don't know, I guess I somewhat feel that, I don't know, maybe, I mean, if I understand, probably next year they'll probably come stateside, but there's a possibility. How long did it take for Julio to get up here?
They usually give all those guys a year in the DSL or like the Arizona rookie leagues. Like sometimes they make it to stateside towards the end of their first professional year, but for the most part, like, they're not, you know, they're 17 years old or whatever, so they're pretty slow with progressing those guys. And it's more so about a slow assimilation rather than, like, I mean, they always put up, you know, the pitching and the talent in the Dominican Summer League and stuff like that isn't to the point where, like, the numbers are usually pretty eye popping for a lot of those guys, but it's to the point where they're just kind of slowly assimilating them into what the Mariners do and stuff like that. And this is not, you know, unique to the Mariners. This is something that every team does. And then the next year they'll be stateside. And that's kind of the meta that they've gone with all those Lazaro Montes and Michael Arroyo and Julio over the years and Noelvi Marte, Felton Celestin, same thing. Yeah, pretty like standard operating procedures for everything there.
Well, I'm excited. I'm cool with it. Sadly, they won't be here for a while. So I guess, Oh, well, we'll see you guys in 2029, I guess. But hey, it's something to look forward to, and Julio will still be here. So he can be kind of that leader that they're looking for that far down the road. I guess, and then I wanted to touch on one thing. So I listen obviously to a lot of different podcasts, and I follow stuff outside the Mariners, but the Mariners did come up in a recent podcast for Section 10, which is Jared Carrabas's Red Sox podcast with Steve Peralt and Colby. I don't remember his last name, but they brought up the Mariners and the whole trade with Luis Castillo, and they were pretty much talking about why they have not moved Masataka Yoshida and what's going on with Casas. But I wanted to get your input on this and kind of talk with you, because it's interesting, because I don't think they're wrong. But it makes me wonder if the Mariners maybe missed an opportunity, possibly. So we'll just play it.
If I took a bite out of a sandwich and was like, this fucking sucks, and then you said, man, I'm hungry, and I was like, do you want this sandwich that sucks? You'd be like, not really. You keep saying how bad it is. Like, that's what the Red Sox did.
I'd say the other half of the sandwich isn't that bad. You got to give that other half of the sandwich a try,
Coley. That's bad negotiating. Like, I'm about to throw it in the trash. You could get it for free. I'm literally, oh, no, I trust wanna... me.
They've tanked his value. There's no getting around.
Yeah, that's why no one's like, yeah, I'll take him off your hands. This guy you keep slandering nonstop.
They've done themselves no favors. But I think even with that being the case, I still have to think somebody would acquire Masataka Yoshida. I get worried about what the money is that you'd have to eat, but 0.0 value just doesn't seem to match up for a guy that, by the way, is like the best player on the team, like we've discussed, you know? Like, yeah, that's the craziest part of this whole thing.
Yeah.
We offered Seattle Casas and Yoshida for their number five pitcher, and they said, no, thanks.
So that was confirmed, by the way. That was confirmed.
This is a team that is desperate for offense. Can't score a fucking run to save their lives. And we were like, hey, we'll take your fifth starter. We'll give you two dudes that maybe have a 900 and an 800 OPS. And they're like, suck our fucking dicks, dude.
And it would save you money. It would save you like $10 million.
Oh, yeah.
And they
were
like, hardest pass of all time.
Yeah.
We're the most set.
I think the Mariners might just be stupid.
They are.
Oh,
that,
no. They
should have
done
that deal. They should have done that deal.
1,000%.
Yeah. I think I would have had regrets about that deal, depending on like who the pitcher was. Like, Was it Wu or Miller?
It was Castillo.
Well, weren't they going for both of them? I thought they were going for Wu and Castillo separately.
Yeah.
Castillo was the
final offer. They countered with Castillo for Casas. And we said, if you're taking Casas, you're also taking. We offered Casas for Wu or Miller. They said, we'll give you Castillo for Casas. We said, what about Casas and Yoshida? And I think they blocked us.
Pretty much, as far as I know, that's pretty much exactly how it went. Yep.
Yeah. And I'm still high on that deal. Like, I understand that who's our fifth starter if Luis Castillo is gone, I guess. Emerson Hancock, and there's certain people, Colby, that are not high on him. And I don't blame him as far as like being he's just not your number five. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think anything's really bad of Emerson Hancock, but he's not anywhere close to anybody else in the rotation. But the problem is that we have our five guys, and then there's really not much there that's MLB ready in our system. So to me, that's the only block on this trade. But are we also, like they said, looking at Yoshida and being like, nah, you guys think he's terrible. You guys think he's, you know, he's trash. And Casas is weird. Like, he's a weird guy. Like, no, we're not doing this.
I mean, like, in a vacuum, I understand it. I don't think that the Mariners had any interest in, like, I think Casas for Castillo, they would have done. I think they had some concerns about the way that he would have translated to T-Mobile Park. Tristan Casas, that is.
Yeah, the numbers were bad. The baseball savant illustrator that kind of just took all of his hits and moved him over to T-Mobile, like, he would have batted like a 210.
Yeah, he uses the big part of the field, which is, you know, you need to use your pull power if you're going to hit in T-Mobile Park well. So I think it was like, we would do Casas for Castillo, but we're not interested in taking another guy who's going to be, it's going to be a bad contract. They're going to be in this situation again next offseason. With trying to get rid of Masataka Yoshida. So it's like, yeah, like, I would have been fine. I think I would have been fine if they did it. But at the same time, I understand why they didn't, because it's like, then you have on this roster, you have Masataka Yoshida, Dylan Moore, Tristan Casas. I mean, Luke Rayleigh, like, you have all these guys in the same kind of bucket to where, like, one of those guys is not playing every day. You have so many guys in this first base DH corner outfield bucket that it's like, and it's a bad contract moving forward. Like, I get why they didn't do that.
Would you rather have Haniger or Yoshida?
I'd rather have, well, it depends. Haniger's gone next year.
True. Okay. Let's say the deal is this year.
I mean, Yoshida's a better player right now.
Very, yeah. Very much.
But you have both.
Correct. But
and Mitch Garver and Luke Rayleigh. So, like, where does Luke Rayleigh play at that point? It's like,
correct. But if the idea of this deal was not to be a salary dump, then, like, you're still gaining money from this because you have a $22 million deal that is very complicated with Castillo. You're replacing that with an 18.6 mil, which is consistent. It doesn't go up anymore after that. He's going to be 34 when he's a free agent.
Yeah.
And he's hitting 270, 280. Yeah. That's really worth it to me. Like, I don't know why we look at his contract and say that's bad when he's hitting 280. I understand he's slugging 415, which is still decent, but he has not had an OPS under 700.
He,
which, like Jared said, we can't hit the ball.
He literally he literally cannot play a position, which is
that's fine. I'm fine with him at DH.
Yeah, but then if you have Tristan Casas, like, you know, where
play my first.
You're just not playing Luke Raley.
I love Luke Raley. I do.
Luke Raley is a much better player than Masataka Yoshida.
Hitter,
player, and hitter.
I wouldn't say he's a better hitter. He's more durable.
Luke Raley posted, I think, a 130 WRC plus last year. Yoshida's like a 115. You know, same. You know, he's a platoon bat. It's an $18 million platoon bat. So you're just putting yourself in. Just knowing what you know about the roster situation, like you said it earlier with the arbitration numbers, basically you're going to eat themselves. They're going to eat that money that Haniger gets off the books.
And Garver, yeah.
And Garver. So you're literally in the exact same spot next offseason if you have Yoshida and you have a guy who literally cannot play a position in the field and he's a platoon bat. So it's like, I think if they were going to deal Castillo, they wanted a hitter to get a hitter back in return and then have some money. Like, they wanted to actually benefit from dealing him in multiple ways. It was to get a hitter back and to have some money to do whatever with, like,
or also get
go
a pitcher
pay a reliever, go pay a bat, go pay another starter that you find interesting. Like, there was avenues that were happening around them. And I think this was like, you know, right about when I think they liked Christian Walker quite a bit as well. So it's like, yeah,
that would have been nice. Yeah, I guess. But again, I just don't see it, man. I really don't. Like, I like Luke Raley. Given what we have right now, I'm not looking at other teams outside of the Mariners. One of our better hitters. 22 bombs. Dude, I am on board. I really do like him. And in fact, I like him more than Randy Rosarena. Obviously, it's been he was there a full year. He produced. And I don't mind his weird stomping around in left field. Randy, I don't know if he has the same value that he used to have when he was with the Rays. But like, if we were to make a trade like that, where we do get rid of Castillo and understand you're going to want a bat, but you're also going to want somebody to fill his spot, which is the reason why I think Crawford was one of the biggest subjects of the matter of like what they possibly wanted to get back. And Red Sox were like, nah. It's not happening. If you made that deal, which I'm not comparing it to Luke Raley, because I'm just saying like he or Randy might have been on the move if that was the case, because it's not like you make this deal and then you're done. Like you're going to move somebody, and with comes the money, obviously Randy would be the one. But I can't get over the fact that Yoshida is... Yes, he's going to be your DH, and I'm fine with him being the permanent DH. You know, give him a couple days off if you need to. Hopefully he doesn't get hurt. But that's just such a significant bat, and then you have someone to play everyday first base. Luke Raley can either go to left field, or you're trading him away, even though he's super cheap. I don't know why you would. And then Randy Rosarena becomes a trading piece to get that pitcher that you want. That was my thought process on this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I mean, there's definitely an argument for it. I just think that the general financial issues that they have, that was just not going to be something. They were not going to get stuck with another Haniger or Garver situation. They're just not. They just weren't going to do that because it just creates such a roster clog for them. And like Yoshida hasn't been, he's kind of struggled in terms of some nagging injuries and health, like since coming over here. So
mm-hmm.
I think there's like,
that's where that DH thing comes in. He has to be the DH.
And he has been. Yeah. He is bad in the outfield. He's like really bad. So
yeah, he's like Robert Jr., which is another favorite everybody talks about as far as a trade mm-hmm. goes. But God knows how much you're going to have to trade for him. And I know Colby's like really big on getting into the outfield ring of things and like just stop focusing on infielders and just go get, if you want a bat, go get an outfield bat. I understand they're full, but you can rotate the guys. And I know Robert is like one of those guys that is just like, I personally do believe if he gets out of Chicago, it doesn't have to be the Mariners, anywhere else, he's going to perform way better. I think the White Sox are a toxic environment. And I think the Padres picking up Gavin Sheets to a minor league deal is going to be something that, and I said this on X like multiple times, pay attention to him, because if his numbers start to go up, this is going to increase the value of Robert Jr. Because it's only going to prove that like a guy who had a high ceiling but a really low floor the last couple of years, and last year he didn't do too bad. He batted like a 240. Like if he wakes up, like it's that toxicity that's in that 120 losing team organization, if that wears off, then you know these players are going to come to life. I mean, you can look at Miguel Vargas when he got traded from the Dodgers. Like he was sitting in a corner in the fetal position looking around like, how the hell has my life gone from the best to this? So I know they can make moves. I just ultimately I wish they did the Castillo deal. I really do. And I don't think that it makes them stupid, because I think your points make sense. Like you are, there is already a clog if you look at it. Like there's already a clog at first base. You have Solano, who you really don't want to play anywhere else besides first, but then you don't have anywhere in the outfield to put Luke Rayleigh, but he can play first, so you put him there so you can have his bat. So I completely understand that, but it's like, where are we going to bite the bullet and just push somebody out? Because we can't hoard these guys. There's not enough money to get more, and the ones that we're hoarding aren't producing. Yeah. Haniger and Garver. Hopefully Garver bounces back. That's his schedule. That's like his schedule for his career. It's good year, bad year, good year, bad year, good year, bad year. So now we should have good year, right? But I don't think they're wrong. I don't think Jared and them were wrong.
No, I mean, I don't think they're necessarily wrong either. They also, you know, when you cover one team, you look at, you know, things in a vacuum for your team, and they probably wish that they would have done that deal. The Mariners would have said yes to that deal because it, you know, probably Casas also has like, you know, significant health concerns as well. So,
yeah,
there's just a lot of factors to it. And, you know, you have to also consider like what else was on the market at the time. Like the Mariners might've had another move in mind that they could only make with having extra money. And there's just, they didn't save a whole lot of money in that deal. So there's just a bunch of different factors that we'll probably never know the full
truth of. Cubs, the Nico Horner deal.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a possibility. I mean, for how much leaked and how much did not get done, it is super disappointing, because we all knew all these players that they're in on, and it was all mostly leaks from other sources. Like the Cubs, their reporters put it out. Boston Globe put it out for the Red Sox deal. Everything else is really quiet in Seattle. But yet, the things that did get out were things like last year, like the firings and the DFAs of Ty France. And it's like, before those guys even know about it, which is like a bad look altogether, which is probably making things a lot harder for guys to come back or to sign in Seattle. Because it's like, all right, if I don't... You know, everybody's going to know that I'm released or dropped before I do, before we even have a meeting. So it's interesting. I do think, though, guys are going to bounce back. They are. It's just there's too many question marks about who's going to be the one to bounce back. Like at this point, I really don't know. But I mean, who's your top three? I mean, we'll just end it with this. Like, who are the three guys that you're super optimistic for in 2025?
In terms of like bounce back guys,
bounce back just or showing what they can do, whether that is like Bliss, because I don't think he really got a
non-proven. Yeah, I would go. I think JP Crawford would be the top of the list. I think he's gonna return to not 2023 form, but I think he'll return to like. Well, I think he'll be like a 110 to 115 WRC plus guy, which is a really valuable player.
Yep.
And then I think, yeah. And then I think if, I don't know, I think the defense might be a little bit of a issue, but I've always been a Polanco guy. I think Polanco will be, I think his battle return to form with him being healthy, I think. And I don't know what that means, but like, you know, I could easily see him being a 110 to 115 WRC plus as well. And then for a third guy, for kind of a bounce back type, I do think that they're going to put Garver in more advantageous situations for him. Like, he's just going to be the backup catcher. He's just going to face lefties the way that the roster is currently constructed. Like, he's going to be put in more advantageous situations. So if he can stay healthy, I think he'll perform much better. I think he was just overexposed against righties. Couldn't really figure it out. So I think he'll be better. You know, it's hard to be worse than he was, but I think he'll be better. just because of the role that they're going to ask him to play. And so, yeah, then maybe in the bullpen, another guy, a guy that I think could have a bounce back year is Gabe Spire. I think he'll be healthy. He was just not right last year. So I think they do have plenty of bounce back candidates. And then there's also, you know, plenty that are probably just not going to bounce back. But yeah, I would say JP Crawford and Polanco are probably one and two. And then, you know, there's some guys that fill in there behind that definitely have a chance. But I feel pretty good about those first two.
Yeah, I think I can agree. I mean, I don't know how long Polanco was dealing with his injury, but from what I read, unconfirmed, it was before he even got traded. Like, he was dealing with some soreness, some issues, and from what I talked to a couple sources from the Minnesota Twins side of things, and they're like, they knew about it. Like, they knew that there was something wrong, and they went through with the deal. So, it's been a long time. It probably only got worse during the season, but, I mean, when he had his surgeries relatively immediately, so I would think that he's healed and he can come back, take it easy. He has less movement, less range that he needs to cover going into 2025. And yeah, if his defense stays the same as it was last season, where you limit the amount of movement he needs to make based on what he could do last year, and his bat comes back, I think we're going to have a great third baseman. I mean, he could even be Alex Bregman level talent, which I think Bregman's been a little overrated this offseason. It would be great to have him on the team, but I think he could produce as well as Bregman does. And being switch hitter, that's only going to make it a lot better facing lefties or righties whenever. So, yeah, I agree with you. I'm looking forward to it, but dude, thank you for coming on and talking to all and, you know, reviewing everything. So hopefully we can have you on in the future. Maybe we can get a couple other guys in here. We had some scheduling issues. Jay just sick and Ty's busy because they're back on like five different podcasts. So we're going to have more people following the next Mariner Monday. So if you guys are new here, again, please go check out Ben's website down in the description. Also go ahead and follow him on X, as almost every YouTube content creator for the Mariners follows him and gets a lot of information from him, and he has some really good insight and articles and interviews and stuff. So I encourage you all to check it out. And besides that, subscribe to this podcast, because I love you guys, and if you love the Mariners, we're going to do this every week, so it gives you another source to get different information, different aspects, and different viewpoints. So again, Ben, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. Absolutely, man. Anytime.
All right. We'll see you guys later.